Welcome back to the Haven Homestead Podcast, where we learn and grow together on our way to living more sustainable lives. This is episode 29, and I'm Chris, and I'm here with Shane, Rachel, and Toby, and they are our current woofers, and we are going to talk about their experiences with woofing. So, welcome guys to the show.
Hey. Thanks, Chris.
So, I have a few questions I wrote down here. I was going to let you guys study them and write down your answers, but we're just going to go improv, so I'll hit you with them. You ready? there's a unified look of terror right now from all three, so we'll start, and you can just kind of, whoever wants to answer can answer, I guess. How did you start this journey of woofing? Like, what? Why are you woofing?
Well, I think Rachel did most of the planning for this trip, so it's probably a good question for her to answer.
Rachel?
Well, I wanted to learn more about farming because I had literally no experience farming coming out of Boston, coming out of Massachusetts. And I planned this trip, like, probably a year ago, knowing I was going to graduate and have some free time on my hands to sort of explore what I wanted to do career-wise and just, like, have some adventures, and it just seemed like a good way to learn about the landscape of the U.S. and also travel for basically for free.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's way cheaper than a hotel, and, yeah, and feed you three meals a day, and you kind of get an opportunity to spend some time in the area that you're in. Toby and Shane, why do you guys woof? Because Rachel's going, and you guys is going along, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rachel's kind of the mastermind. I sort of just tagged along for the ride. Initially, woofing just seemed like a convenience that would make the trip more affordable. I'd done a little bit of manual labor before, so it seemed like a legitimate option. I've definitely been surprised and pleased at just, like, how welcoming people have been, our hosts.
Oh, yeah. Not to welcome with? You got people coming on that want to do work on your farm.
Yeah,
that's really a limiting factor sometimes, is how much you can fit in a day. Mm. Yeah. And if three able-bodied people show up and want to help out, it's a big help.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. True.
I had done farming a couple times. I worked at a farm in Rhode Island that had woofers come through, and I always met cool people, and it was really helpful. And the people that came through always had, like, good things to say about the program. And so when Rachel started talking about it, I was like, oh, that sounds cool. Like, that's something I'd be down for.
You guys are all from the East Coast, from Boston area, mm-hmm, all born and raised in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so city life is what you're kind of used to. So coming out here, and this is straight up country. I mean, you can't see a neighbor from our place, and cars go by seldom on the road. It's not real bad traffic and everything, so it's definitely different from where you're from.
Yeah,
we almost, like, we were talking about on our drive back here how we almost were dreading going back into a city after being out in the country.
I love it out here.
Being isolated and not having to deal with the hustle bustle of the city.
Yeah.
It's a really different life, and it's really awesome so far.
Cool. Right on. So how'd you hear about it? Shane said you worked on a farm.
Yeah, I worked on a...
And so you had woofers before that you've had contact with.
Yeah, I worked on a farm in Rhode Island that was relatively small. There was, like, the farming couple that owned it, and then me and, like, three or four other farmers that worked on it as, like, farmhands. But then woofers would come through once in a great while. Like, you know, once a week maybe. There'd be, like, a few people, and they'd stay for maybe a day or two. And I had never heard of woofing before that, and then I was just, you know, you're weeding or whatever you're doing and talking to people, and they're like, oh, I traveled to Hawaii or California or Kansas, wherever they were, and I always had cool things to say about the program, and it just, like, was something that I'd always wanted to do, you know, be like, oh, that'd be a good way to travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it cost to do a yearly subscription?
Yep, it's $40 for the year to sign up for the database, and then it gives you a map of the United States, and you can literally just zoom in on any area that you're, like, interested in.
You're like, since you mentioned Kansas, you're like, oh, Topeka. Yeah. You're like, zoom in, zoom in, zoom in. You're like, and there's 10 within this, you know, the city borders or whatever. And then you just click on it and email them and say, I want to come down, right? If you're going to be in that area or passing through or whatever.
I was emailing, like, 15 farms from every state that we planned on traveling in, and I would only hear back from, like, one or two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've replied to every person that's sent us a request, and we've only had three requests, and Mickey was the first one, and then you guys, and then the person who's coming soon, I guess we don't really have a set date for her, but...
Yeah, you guys
so
are super responsive.
We've responded to everybody. I mean, you get an email on your phone, it pops up. I don't see how that would be a difficult to think. And if you don't have a room, or if you don't have a spot or whatever, all you have to do is just say, we're not accepting any right now, and then it's done
I would always mention that we could provide our own sleeping accommodations. Yeah. Like, we're not, you know, it's really nice when someone has a camper or, you know, a room offset of the house, but it definitely, like, wasn't a requirement for mm-hmm. me looking at places to stay at.
Well, because we have the bed and breakfast, it was nice that you're like, oh, we can sleep in a tent or car, whatever, we can provide our own, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, all right, we don't have to... You know, give up a bed and breakfast room or anything for it. Yeah. So that was really nice, too. Or that way we can be kind of...
A little more flexible.
Doing more work and still making money.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So have you guys woofed before this?
Mm-mm. No, well, my first experience was 2 weeks ago. Or a week ago when we were at Rochambeau in Sheridan, Oregon. And honestly, we didn't even do that much work because they run a music venue out of it, and they were having this eclipse festival. So basically, we were just doing, like, we weren't doing a lot of farming. We were just doing cleanup.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, farm hands for their, but their other thing, like, ours is education and hospitality, and theirs was, like, music venue.
Yeah.
So,
but that
was also
there.
What they had us doing for them was drinking their cider. But, you know, not to say that...
It was good cider, though, right?
Yeah,
it was
really
good. We definitely get paid well for our work here and the food that we get. And I've already learned a lot just from, like, the 2 days of work that we've done. So.
Yeah, you guys have been super helpful. It's been awesome having you here. So what are some of the things you've learned, then? You said you learned some things. What are they? I put you on the spot.
Well, I learned how to use a scythe or a scythe, depending on your... pronunciation.
You look like the Grim Reaper walking back there with the scythe thing over your shoulder. And the nice thing is no oil, no gas, no, you know, noise, no air and, you know, noise pollution. It's just, you just, you
the
and the scythe
body.
And and you take your sharpening stone out and every once in a while you hear him ching, ching, you know, as he's sharpening it up and then he starts going back at it. And you got a lot, I mean, did some... damage back there. It really cleaned out a lot of...
It's a really efficient tool for one that's, like, so old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What else did I learn? Let's see. I used a chainsaw for the first time.
That was the first time using a chainsaw?
Yeah.
You did well.
Yeah. I got stinging nettle. I contacted the stinging nettles, and then your daughter taught me to chew up plantain leaves as a remedy.
Yeah, I used some plantain to take the sting out of the stinging nettle for bug bites and stuff. That'll work, too. Yeah, plantain's awesome.
Just little things about you guys, sort of permaculture style, like using rabbit poop from your rabbit pens to fertilize your trees, just things that make the metabolism of the farm more efficient.
Yeah, yeah, everything, you know, all the different, what do I call it, like the circles, you know, they overlap and just try to make them match up as well to make the ecosystem work, because there needs to be a flow in the farm too. I was doing a design for a lady close by, near here, and I can show you guys after the interview, but I put the animals, it's on a hill, this property that we're designing is on a hill, so we put animal pens on the upside, that way that you're wheeling a heavy wheelbarrow down the hill, and a light one up the hill, so that you can, and then also chickens, when they scratch, they always like to push things downhill. They'll point their head uphill and then scratch so that things go downhill. So if she has compost, then it will hopefully go into the garden, or at least closer to the garden, where then she can scoop it over the fence or something. You
That's
know, labor saving, so...
Also, just the idea of how all of your animals on the farm need to be doing, like, accomplishing some sort of task, like how you're talking about how you might need to get rid of the ducks because they're not producing anything anymore, like... It doesn't make sense, you know, to have, like, a domestic animal on the farm. Even the cats and the dog, you know?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, as people coming from the city where, like, most animals that you meet are just pets.
Yeah.
Like, it's different. Every animal has a purpose here and a job to do.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was cool to learn about the tree grafting, too. I've never had any
And we got some fruit on the grafts. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And it's been really successful. I don't know if, you know, I think I was taught by the right kind of people that could teach in a good way or something, but it's been really successful. Almost all my grafts have taken that haven't been chewed off by the goat or broke off by the cats climbing the trees or something like that.
Mm.
But not many of them have died that, you know, that weren't knocked off. But
yeah.
Shane, is there anything that you've learned in particular?
Yeah, I like to see the rabbit like system that's here. That's really interesting. I like rabbit meat, and so it was cool just seeing like how you have the pens, like the stages of the rabbits, kind of. Yeah, I'd like to see more too, but that's one thing in particular.
We're gonna be breeding the doe again here pretty soon.
Yeah,
because it's time. You know, their babies are coming out of their cages. So the babies are getting separated from the moms here pretty soon. As soon as we clear out the butcher stock, I guess you could say. So as soon as those ones that are ready to butcher now are processed, then we'll put the babies that are growing into those pens to be fed on grass and stuff like that.
Mm.
And so that until they get fattened up. And then one of those does is going to be bred. I was doing two does like every 2 months, but I think I'm going to start lengthening it out to where I breed one doe every month. And I've got four does, so I can, they'll have be bred three times a year, which I think will make them be healthier for them, and it'll be more able to handle the rabbits, the babies, because right now we're just getting, I mean, we've got almost 30 baby rabbits, and so it's a lot to feed one, and a lot to kind of juggle, so we're learning too. And some of the things, like, Toby was telling me about that some people that, they say if you smoke and you touch tomatoes that you can give them a disease
The mosaic virus.
Yeah, a virus. But I've never heard that before. But I know that there are people that, maybe they just, after they smoke, they wash their hands. I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, there's people that smoke that have gardens and they grow tomatoes. So
yeah.
There's got to be, I don't know what they do to mitigate that risk, but...
I think it's pretty hard, because Shane was saying you carry it on your hands for, like, 6 months after you smoke, or something like that.
It doesn't always transmit, but,
It's got to be, I don't know.
If you have a lot of tomatoes, that's when you want to be careful.
Oh, like a greenhouse or something like that, but we've only got 8 plants.
Yeah.
But it's more tomatoes. I mean, we've got so many tomatoes that are green right now. It's... The tomatoes were, I couldn't reach them. They were over 8 feet tall before they kind of fell over.
Oh, the plants, yeah.
Then they fell over, and Lindsay was saying we need to get better tomato cages, because they're even kind of pushing the cages, and we got the stout ones, too, then put them in there. Not the real, not ones made out of rebar or real big metal, but the stout ones at the feed store, and they're even pushing those over, so we're going to have to do something different this next year, maybe.
The farm I worked on in Rhode Island, they had a system where they had strings with almost like a kite string where it's wound up on a something you could let it off. And as the tomato would grow up the vine, you would let the string down and you'd harvest, because it'll grow like at the bottom first and out, you know, so the first ripe tomato is on the inside part and then the next one on the next, you know, as it grows up.
Kind of like a Christmas tree?
Yeah. And then you would just sort of like kind of... collapse the vine down into like almost like a, you know, like a accordion kind of shape.
So you'd twist the vine down?
Yeah, you would just sort of tend it down, and as it's going, you know, it would kind of zigzag back and forth, and then it stays at the height you want it to.
But it's because it's zigzagging back and forth, you have like more vine on less height or something?
Yeah, there's vine, but you've already harvested those tomatoes, so it's just, they'll keep growing up to the top of the vine.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then that way you don't have to like have it way up high, or you just let the rope down, you know, like a foot at a time.
Yeah, because they were getting crazy out there. I was like, I don't know if they start growing way up high, but then, of course, they just get so high and then they start having tomatoes on top that they just lay over. and then they start growing up again.
Yeah.
So we have kind of funny shaped tomatoes, and then they lay over on each other, and I just let them do their thing, because it's only going to be another month and a half until the frost comes, and then they're done. So.
Yeah.
So it's a learning experience for us too. You know, having people here with different experiences and different skill sets, different personalities, different work ethics, different physical abilities, all kind of plays into it. And, you know, like we made the list of things that projects we'd like to get done. And some people can, you know, there's some that some people can do and some that other people can't do. You know, building things isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
And butchering isn't for everybody. Yeah. And canning isn't for everybody. You know, so, although I think that everyone should do those things. Have you ever heard that Robert A. Heinlein? He wrote Starship Troopers. He has
Isn't
a.
Isn't he the one that wrote your book?
Yeah, we have a Heinlein book in the car.
He had a story or a quote that says a human should be able to. And it says, you know, like change a diaper, butcher a hog, con a ship, all these different things that a human should be able to do. And then at the bottom it says specialization is for the insects.
That's cool.
Yeah, isn't that? That's awesome, right? It's true. You should be able to do so many things. Even if you don't like, say, butchering a rabbit, I think that you should know how to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully you'll never have to do it as a, you know, survival thing. But I think just knowing how to do it. And if you know how to butcher an animal, if you know your way around a carcass of any sort, you could butcher a sheep or a, you know, or a hog or anything, because you know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Methodology, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's
cut it open, take the guts out.
Yeah. Just,
you know.
But at the same time, you guys are pretty open to like letting us work on what we're interested in.
Yeah.
And, like, you guys are super
helps.
Super respectful of that.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we appreciate it. Mm. Yeah, we appreciate it. Whatever you guys want to work on, there's so many things to do across the spectrum of building or harvesting or whatever. Yeah. We're also going to do some fruit harvesting. You know, like we're talking about, there's so many people that have fruit trees around here, because trees, I mean, the Northwest grows trees.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the perfect soil and perfect climate for growing trees. And people have lots of fruit trees, but they're not always interested in harvesting, and some of them are too, you know, people are too old, or they haven't taken care of the trees, and so maybe they have some, they're not, you know, like the kind you get in the store. They might have some little spots on them, or maybe, you know, a worm got in there or something, and they're just like, you know, we're not going to worry about. They try an apple, and they're like, oh, this one had a worm in it, I'm not going to eat any of my apples off the tree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good opportunity for us to go in and harvest apples and then bring them back and make cider out of them.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many blackberries around here, and you can make blackberry whatever you want, you know, out of it.
Yeah.
And so
jams and jellies and
yep.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of things. And we have a friend, the lady actually I'm doing the design for, she has a mulberry tree in her backyard that she said we could go and harvest. She's got more mulberries than she can handle, so we'll probably go. And she's got figs and things like that. So
even like drying fruit too, that's like another
yeah.
You know, dried fruit for like fruit snacks or something
It's a skill.
Yeah.
You know, as you learn more things, you'll develop these skills and become more of a unspecialized human, you know.
Less of an insect.
Yeah, less of an insect, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, thanks guys for this interview, and I think that we're gonna still have some good times ahead.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Please remember to come out and visit us at havenhomestead.com, and also please consider supporting us at patreon.com/havenhomestead. This has been the Haven Homestead Podcast, where we learn and grow together on our way to living more sustainable lives. Thanks for listening.